What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
It's 3:41 a.m. in Tacoma, Washington. And you're listening to Night Call.
Hello and welcome back to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I am Tess Lynch in Los Angeles with
Molly Lambert, and joining us in New York is
Emily Oshita, one-time resident of Tacoma, Washington.
Look at that. Did you recognize the address in the thriller that we're going to discuss later?
You mean, what was it?
808 Yakima?
Yakima. It's Yakima.
Sorry.
Yakima, Washington is also the birthplace of Kyle MacLachlan. Fun fact, Washingtonian.
Ooh, wow. I didn't know he was real.
They are not in Tacoma, though. They're in Seattle. They're like on the other side. So Seattle is like...
I think it was filmed in both.
It was filmed in Tacoma.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Filmed in a combo.
We'll tell you what we're talking about soon. But first, Emily had something very strange arrive in her mailbox that she forwarded to me and Molly. Emily, can you please talk about this?
Okay, so I got a letter in the mail after getting back from Austin. It's fun to get mail. Everybody, I'm getting it out of my bag right now as we speak. Everybody loves to get mail. This was a 10-page double-sided letter in courier font. And the first, I'll start reading it just to the top. I'm not going to read the whole thing because, as I said, it is 10 pages double-sided. But it starts, "Emily, please forgive us, but we've just taken a closer look at your profile. It turns out you're more special than any of us imagined. Did you know that you possess some very rare hidden traits? In fact, there is a famous person, someone you would instantly recognize, he's on TV every night, who possesses these same special, incredibly rare traits. It turns out, the people who possess these same rare and often hidden traits that you do are some of the most famous and successful people on this planet. Emily, you are indeed blessed. I know those around you don't know this yet, but they will. Down deep, you sense it too, right? I'm so excited for you! Exclamation point. This goes on to be a extremely long pitch for me to join something referred to as the Society, which is the S is capitalized and the word is italic oftentimes in the letter. I did a little research on because I was this. First of all, this just seems so old school. It feels like something from the 90s, or like it feels like getting a chain letter or something. Did you
it's
guys
very
ever do like
chain letter? Yeah,
old chain letters. Yeah. So they do a bullet point list on this. Is on page 9 of 12. Here is just a sample of the power of the secrets. Discover the one simple method to transform all money and power from the uninformed to you instantly. Use this amazing bit of new scientific knowledge that will generate a mountain of cash like a personal ATM machine automatically. You don't even have to do anything. The simple, easy way to get the lover of your dreams, regardless of his or her situation. Learn how to seduce anyone in any situation and even how to win your ex-love back. Control anyone, anytime, anywhere. Find out how simple it is to lose all the weight you want and eliminate any addiction, food, alcohol, cigarettes, drugs, once and for all. Know how to heighten your new powers and render all others completely helpless.
Yikes.
It goes on and on.
That's the weirdest cell.
You sent us a picture of it also, and it was like photocopied. It looked like a Zodiac letter.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's all like, you know, courier font the whole way through. So I did a little research on it, and I sent you guys a couple of articles from the LA Times from a few. One was from like 2013, and one was from 2016.
Yes, David Lazarus. And they're both really interesting.
Yeah. So the more recent one was that the letter had arrived for somebody who was dead, and the person's adult child had gotten the letter. And the guy who's like in charge of this thing, some guy in like Henderson, Nevada, he went and interviewed him, the reporter did. And, you know, he insisted we handpick all the people that we send this out to. There's a rigorous selection process, but they're basically like, okay, the rigorous selection process led you to this guy who's been dead for 2 years. The scam seems to be something, it's like a cross between Scientology and like encyclopedia salesman. You get one kind of introductory book when you sign up for this, like just to get you interested in these secrets. That
you sign up free and they give you like a couple secrets.
It's like a pamphlet.
Which sounds like it's basically like objectivism, kind of like libertarianism. Yeah. And then they're like, to figure out how to do it, you need to buy what
the
I think amounts
book.
To like three volumes of books. And the books
it's
are
like
all...
$10,000 or something in total or over.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Here's my question. How did you get on this mailing list, Emily?
They say they
have methods. What are their methods?
Well, all of my best mail I know comes from the fact that I have credit card debt. Could be that. There's something about this letter that, even though it's ridiculous and so obviously insane, I did not sit down and read the whole thing beginning to end. I kind of like skimmed it and found some interesting parts. But I could imagine like being a particularly lonely person with not a lot to do and getting this letter and sitting down and not really having anything better to do and reading the whole thing and like being like, yeah, you know what? I am special. Like, I do have a good profile, you know, like, yeah, it just like kind of, it tells you everything you want to hear in a really dumb way. But yeah, it's very clearly a scam. My favorite part about it is that like it says that the members of the society apparently have meetups and like fraternize
and talk about how to render others helpless.
Yeah, they
and take all of their money.
It's like Bohemian Grove.
I read that one of the ways that they choose who to send the letters to is based on like the publicly available data of which magazines you subscribe to. I think one of them was like Forbes or Fortune.
Well, as we all know, Emily's an avid consumer of finance magazines.
Subscriber to Forbes.
The Rob Report.
I'm wondering if there are like publicly available lists of who goes to film festivals and stuff like that. Could that like be a link?
Well, I feel like you're too smart if you're going to, like, honestly.
My first thought was, did you sign up for the what was the other one in the subway that you saw that was like...
The School for Practical Philosophy.
Yeah.
No, I never signed up for that. We talked about that because there was like the... I think it was on the outline. Yeah, that we talked about. Like, I there was a period of time when I like was new to LA and I was like, oh, I'll just like go to the museum of... What is the name of their museum? The Scientology...
The Psychology is Death Museum.
Well, don't get it confused for the Death Museum. I know, which is a shitty serial killer museum.
Or is that not the Museum of Death?
That's the Museum of Death, but it's different from Psychology and Industry of Death, which
there
is
we
right.
go.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Anti-psychiatry. They're both really scary and off-putting in different ways.
Yeah.
But you know, part of me is always like, I'll go to the thing, like I'll just check it out. It'll be wild.
Psychiatry and Industry of Death. It's next to the Cat and Fiddle.
Yeah. Well, it just feels like they would like scan your DNA as soon as you like walk through the door and then you'd never get off their mailing list. I mean, it feels
I knew a lot of people who wanted to casually wander into some of those things and I was like, don't do it.
Yeah. You're
you
on
have
that
to
list
sign
forever.
A thing and then...
The society, though, goes by a bunch of also different names like Neotech, the Novus Tech Society, Nouveau Tech Society, Neothink Society... and it was started by this guy named Frank Wallace, who was born Wallace Ward. And then his son took it over. His son's name is Wallace Ward Jr., I guess. And then he now goes by the name Mark Hamilton, which he, I think, tried to trademark. But there's also like an interesting thing on the Rational Wiki when I Googled the society. Like I kind of fell into like a web hole on this about how Mark Hamilton is like in a fight with Jimmy Wales from Wikipedia. Because, like, I guess, according to Hamilton, Jimmy Wales used to be a contributor on the alt.neotech Usenet group. And then they got into this, like, thing because Hamilton wanted to, like, edit the Neotech Wikipedia and his dad's Wikipedia. And, like, Wikipedia, you know, was, like, allowing truthful edits and he wanted, like, a kinder edit. It's just a mess.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So much stuff about old hacker groups coming up recently.
Oh, yeah.
we love our
Hack
our
the Planet.
Mr. Robot presidential candidate for 2020. Yeah.
Well, you were also, Emily, you also got like a ton of weird international calls to your cell phone.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is, I'm not alone in this. Because I did a little bit of a search afterwards, and Ira Madison was tweeting about this, of getting calls from... I had been getting them from Belarus. I think there were some a couple of other countries that people were getting calls from. But they would just like show up. And of course, I was not picking them up because I just don't pick up unknown calls, much less calls from Belarus. But then I was getting them repeatedly, which usually doesn't happen. So then I blocked one and then it was like whack-a-mole. Like once I blocked one, then another number would start calling me until I blocked that one, too. This was kind of happening on and off, like, throughout the time that I was in Texas. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what that one is about, but there is, like, a thing of just, like, it's one of these ways that, like, terrorism gets funded, like, doing these kind of auto calls and, like, collecting this 2 pennies or something for, like, just from the carriers.
How terrorism gets funded? Hold on.
No, because it's like this scheme where it's like you
like
do
for
you.
Who? Wait, who is it funding?
Oh, it's just one of these schemes. Like they'll set up these auto calls to call people in international numbers, and then there's
like
if it gets picked
in
up,
Belarus.
No, not necessarily. It's you can look it up. This is the thing. The carrier will pick up the call, and then there's like a 2 cent or something amount that is bounced back to the caller. And so they just do this in this high volume. And it's one of these like black market methods of fundraising. You guys
I'm Googling it. I'm not being silent out of
I forget the
wrong.
Name of it, but it's
I want to know who's doing it.
It's
like phone freaking.
All right. Snopes, like Snopes weighs in. Terrorists funded through telemarketing. claim. Terrorists are funding their operations through a telephone scam that lures the unsuspecting. Hold on.
No, because the whole thing has nothing to do with any contact made with a person.
Oh, okay.
You're never, the goal is to, like, get somebody to pick up the phone for, you know,
I can believe this is a thing. It's just, it breaks my brain to try and figure out how it would work and,
why. Okay, go to what does Snopes say?
Snopes said it was false, but it was, like Emily said, it was a different thing. It was, like, you know, they keep you on the line. She's saying that they just randomly whip through numbers to collect a very small fee somehow.
Who are we talking about?
I'm continuing to Google.
Who are the terrorists that are funded? That sounds fake.
It does sound fake. I mean,
I cannot tell you the names.
That sounds
of
like an urban legend. And that is interesting too, because it is interesting how people are trying to, like, defund Snopes because they're like, it's got correct info about stuff we don't want there to be correct information about.
Snopes is the only
one. And the idea that Wikipedia came out of an argument between some people on, like, a rationalist message board is not super surprising. And that one guy was like, let's be what we think is truthful. And the other person was like, no, no, there's, like, an objective truth you have to stick to.
Right.
Also seems like everything that's happening now.
So this particular Snopes that is false, unsurprisingly false, that terrorists were calling people and being like, stay on the line because I've got really interesting information about an upcoming nuclear attack. And people were like, oh, now I have to stay on the line because
I
got to
find out about these attacks.
So that is false.
I believe that people are doing black market robocalls to raise money. I don't believe that it is
funding terrorism.
Linked to terrorism unless there's some actual proof of that.
So is this like a DDoS attack that we're kind of talking about?
It's similar in nature, yeah.
I was getting some robocalls, a lot of robocalls recently, but they're all for, like, a dream vacation. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
It's a robot, and it's like,
I don't get any.
Is it the robot
like that
pretends to be? I like the sound,
it's
like
hello.
Soundboard ones. Yeah,
the ones where it's like, I'm a fake person. It's like, hello. Yeah. Have you been thinking about going on a dream vacation? It's like, yes.
Yeah. All the time.
Stay on the line. No, yeah. I always hang up, but I do often. I pick up sometimes because sometimes they come from, like, a local-ish number, and I'm just like, let's find out. I think I got one weird call from maybe a Belarus type. I got one weird European call that I was like, not picking that up.
Right.
But I'm sure, I feel like I've talked about this on the pod before. The scam that I got for a minute was the one where somebody calls you from jail. In Texas.
Oh, I think I do remember this.
It was like, you have a call. They call you collect, and they're like, you have a collect call from, you know, the Texas, whatever.
Inmate number 359.
Right. And I, like, the first time it happened, I was like, do I know somebody? Who would I know that would be calling me collect from jail
it's
in
very
Texas?
Very stressful to deny
it's
a call from jail.
Well, right. You're like, oh, am I, like, what if this person's in need? And
what
I
if I were in jail?
Right.
And they were like, I don't know anyone in jail.
But then you figure out it's a scam.
Yeah.
I had a really frustrating, like, obviously fake but frustrating call a couple weeks ago from somebody who said that my identity had been compromised and used to rent a car in Texas. And the car was found abandoned with, like, $5,000 worth of cocaine in it.
What?
And Emily, what?
And they said that my social security number had been compromised.
Whoa.
And needed to be deactivated. And then I started to, like, I was like, who are you again? And, like, you know, not to generalize, but it sounded like a South Asian, like, you know, outsourced caller. And I was like, well, where are you going? Because he said he was in upstate New York from, like, the New York State Police. And then I, like, asked for a badge number and stuff. And then I was like, I'm going to get my husband on the phone. And then he hung up.
Yeah.
That's a really, it's sort of amazing that, like, phone scams have come back because maybe they're in some way.
They've ramped up so much because of spoofing and VOIP. I mean, it's super easy.
What's spoofing?
Spoofing is when
you disguise
your number with a number. Like, if you have caller ID, it could say, like, the, you know, Office of Corrections, the IRS. Like, I I get so many
calls.
Wait,
really?
Yeah, because
that's,
no,
that's, oh, yes. You can put in like a fake like calling from the IRS.
You can spoof
it
somewhere. And really? That's why, because they used to be able to deactivate. They would trace where the numbers were coming from. It would be like the actual number.
This,
and
like,
then they would deactivate.
It comes up on your cell phone like the police are calling.
Pretty
well,
much.
That's what happened
it comes
to me
up on
with
my
this
landline.
Call. This yeah. call from the quote unquote New York State Police. Like, I Googled the number while I was on the phone with them. And it was a legit number from the New York State Police. But
and
it was
then,
a
too,
number.
You block.
Oh, weird.
You can block the
that,
number,
that
but
seems...
then you're blocking the real number. You're not blocking the spoofer.
Right.
That
yeah.
seems illegal.
It's totally illegal.
Oh, no, it's legal. So I called them, and I was just to, like, heads up that yeah. that their number had been spoofed, because it's like... and so I don't know. I guess they were going to follow up on it. But it's like, it's hard. I think it's really hard to counteract that, because you can't really do anything from your end if you're
exactly.
the one with the spoof number.
It also is really messed up, because there are three that I've heard of actually happening, are spoof numbers being used to realistically impersonate, you know, kidnap. You heard about the scam where it's like you call elderly people and say that a loved one's been kidnapped and kind of like...
I know that a lot of the scams are you call elderly people and yeah. people that might be like alone and lonely. And
but it's like if you call someone who's not familiar with you know, caller
right.
ID spoofing and
right.
it says the IRS or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
exactly. It says Windows customer support for the your Windows computer
it's
has a virus.
It's just interesting
because
it's yeah. like that is sort of high tech for a thing involving phones, but it's still phones. I'm just like,
yeah, I know.
Wow, people pick up the phone and talk on the phone.
I mean, I always get nervous because I usually choose not to pick up the phone if I don't know the number, but then like. Maybe one out of four times it ends up being somebody that's calling me about something work related and I just
right.
didn't know. And so I'll get the email right after like, hey, I just tried you and I just didn't happen to have their number or their name, you know, attached to the number. But so it's not like I use the phone quite a bit, actually. Like I talk to people on the phone pretty often.
Emily loves the phone.
I love the phone.
It's preferred communication.
It's like so much more efficient than it only takes one hand.
Wait, unlike texting? Texting also only takes
one
hand.
You text with one hand? That's so
yeah.
slow. That's even more inefficient.
No, I text really fast.
I text mostly on the computer. But when I text on
I
my
text
phone,
on the
I
computer.
Text with one
oh,
hand.
I'm against yeah. texting on the computer.
Love it.
You guys
I
are
love
crossing
to text
the
on
streams.
The computer.
Yeah. I can't cross the streams.
I am obsessed with texting on the... When I text on the computer with someone who doesn't, I'm like, wow, they must think I'm the best texter
yeah.
in the world.
I'm the best texter in the world
I write
on
so
my phone
fast.
With one hand. I don't yeah. need a... Don't need the keyboard. I don't know, you two-hand texters.
Guys, I think we should take a night email.
Absolutely. This call comes to us from Eve. We got this a little while ago, so hopefully it's not too late, but we just thought it was timely, so we thought we'd read it. Dear Night Call, I live in New York, and my family and friends are all in the Northeast. I just found out that I was accepted to a grad program at USC. What do I need to know to decide whether I should move to LA? My main worries are, A, I'm not a very good driver, and B, what with the coming climate apocalypse, maybe I don't want to be 3,000 miles from everyone I love. What do you think? Thanks, Eve.
I think there are two parts to us answering this email. One of them is just an excuse to talk about the college admissions scandal for a second.
Back on scams.
Yes,
yeah.
In
speaking
which USC played a central role.
Speaking of old scams made new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
USC was where Lori Loughlin, or no, yeah.
Yeah,
we got
Lori Loughlin.
Yeah,
we got
Lori Loughlin's
night,
daughters
you know, like,
went.
2 weeks ago, and then that scandal broke, and we were like,
yeah.
let us still answer.
Also,
this
we should clarify, I mean, not clarify, because she says it, but just reiterate. She's gotten to a grad program, so this is a little
yeah.
bit different than, like, scamming your way onto the rowing team at USC. Like, you know, I'm sure that there's a much more legit process for getting into grad school there, but,
who
like...
Who knows, you know? I
who
mean,
knows?
I think, Eve, you sound like you got in on your own merits, so congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
But, you know, USC has had a really troubled couple of years right
yeah.
now.
This is like the 15th scandal.
It is.
This year. And all of the scandals were like, some of them were more lurid than this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, this one, after the initial kind of like, you know, scandalous nature of
yeah.
the fact that so many recognizable names had
yeah.
like committed a real crime. And it was like very
yeah.
strange. I think... Looking back at the USC scandals, the guy who was, like, doing drugs and operating on eyes and also the, like, really awful gynecologist. from 2013.
Trigger warning.
Yeah.
There was like the head of gynecology, like one of the people in the medical department at USC, mm-hmm. was like maybe head of gynecology, was like molesting people during exams, which is something that happens in The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Yes, which yeah, we'll be discussing next. Yes, that was Dr. Tyndall, I believe.
Yeah, that
his
happened.
Name was.
There were just like a lot of bad things.
USC.
Listen, USC has bad energy.
It
can
has
I say
bad
that? I know
energy.
I'm from
no,
UCLA.
Because you're from UCLA. So
I mean,
allowed.
Like, go Bruins.
Go Bruins.
But like, they just, I did apply for USC, and maybe I have a little bit of, you know, resentment because they were the only school that did not accept me of all the, like, however many I applied to. But I'm glad that I didn't go to USC because it feels like, it feels just like a bad vibe school. Like, I can't.
I know a lot of
when is the last time something cool happened?
No, I mean, USC is, there's a lot of good, cool people who go there. And
sure.
then there's, it's like, but it's also sort of a party school.
Yeah.
It is both.
University
like,
of Spoiled Children.
Right, but it's also like, it also is like a film school with
and
a great reputation.
And I got a shout out. Our undergrad friend, Ray. Hi, Ray. You probably don't listen to the podcast, but I always have to like think, Ray was this guy who went to high school with us, and he was super interested in toy cars, but he was just like really smart and like into, like, he kind of understood the internet in a really like precocious way. Anyway, he went to USC, and he was also working the entire time that he was at USC. I think that they were like more supportive of that than some undergraduate programs would have been. And as a result, like, he got to kind of work on his dream job while still having the ability to like have a college life and stuff. He made USC sound like the perfect place for a certain type of kid, you know, who like really
right.
knows what they want to do and they want to start working, but they also want to.
All the schools are corrupt.
Yes.
All private institutions are corrupt. There were like a lot of things going on in the story, which was like people being mad that these rich people scam their kids way into the school, and then other people being mad that they like didn't do it the right way, that like normal rich
That's
people
the thing, yeah.
scam their way in by like buying buildings and donating things. And,
well,
like,
this is like the middle class rich person's way of scamming their way in. Like, you're not quite rich enough to buy a wing, but you
However,
still can, like, bribe your way into the school.
I thought William H. Macy and Felicity Huffman were totally famous enough to get a kid into USC just on, like, being famous people.
It sounded like
Depends
they just kind of
Depends on what they
panicked.
Want to study.
I mean, I think yeah. it just sounds like it. And, you know, I feel bad for the kids. A lot of people were kind of coming down on the kids, saying the kids must have known. And even though, like, Lori Loughlin's kids didn't seem jazzed to be at school, I guess her daughter, Olivia Jade, who's, like,
she,
the
like,
influencer.
She, like, openly talked about how she, like, didn't
openly.
Really want to go to classes.
Well, it was clearly, which is like, gross. She just wanted to go to school with her friends so she could,
yeah,
like,
she wanted yeah. to go to parties.
Yeah.
But like, it's also hard because it's, like, what if any of those kids didn't know? That's just like the most fucked up thing.
Well, they
does.
Shouldn't even be in the running to go to those schools is the thing. They just
yeah.
like, it's the entitlement of being,
but imagine,
like, we should get to go to those schools because all our friends are going.
But imagine thinking that you got in and then you find out that there were like photoshopped pictures of you
I
in
feel
a
like
boat.
She'll be fine. She's rich. She'll
yeah,
be fine.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's I a messed know. Up thing for a parent to do to a kid, even if it comes from like started as a seed of good intention, turned into this like really gross crime. But I mean, it was interesting to me.
But
just
it's like,
to
shouldn't
see.
You know that your kid's not smart enough to go to that school? And
no,
be
you're,
also,
you're never,
like,
as a parent, you're never going to be like, my kid's not smart
but
enough. You're going to
you
be like, they don't try. But,
like,
if they could try.
But if wouldn't she be happier at like a school where she like
right.
just couldn't party?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
This is like friend of pod, Justin Charity on his podcast, Damage Control. They were talking about how or she might be an idiot. We might think of her as being an idiot because she's like this 18-year-old, doesn't care about school, whatever. But she's like a pretty successful YouTuber, is probably making her own money off of that. Like, she doesn't necessarily need to go to a school, and clearly
yeah,
doesn't
yeah.
have that much
well,
interest
the,
in
does
it. Like,
anyone,
that's the other thing.
Really.
Nobody needs to
right.
go to college.
I mean, no, some
no.
people, doctors.
Yes, but
yeah, but she's
doctors.
Still trying to be a doctor. Like,
no,
she's
not.
Wants
but
to
I'm
an
saying
influencer.
College is only useful for
like if she wanted to get an MBA or something,
now. Right?
Like, sure, but you know, and so I think like the discussion of like our caller who is going to a grad program, that feels like a very different thing than this obligatory undergraduate education at like a classy quote unquote institution. Like the purposes of undergrad versus grad are vastly different, especially when you're talking about it in this way. Like,
yes,
you have much more autonomy by the time you're applying for grad school.
Yeah. To answer the question of should she move across the country to go to USC, knowing that she does not like driving and that her family's on the East Coast and that she is concerned about the climate apocalypse, I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Yeah.
And that's a bold thing to say,
well,
but I'm going to stand behind it.
Depends what the grad program is in and how much debt you're going to go into.
Oh, yeah. If there's debt, I mean, yeah.
I will say also that, having known a lot of grad students, like that's just another oversaturated job market with not enough jobs, full of overqualified people that have like done all the work and checked all the boxes and then are like,
wait, what market? What job market?
Like the professorial job market that
people go to grad school, academia.
Yeah. A place that you would think was like a respite from the rest of capitalism is also bad.
Absolutely not. All schools are run like businesses now, regardless of if they're public or private.
That's the thing is that like, I mean, all of us have clearly made the decision to not go to grad school, shaken out differently, different great outcomes for all of
time.
Us. There's still time.
Are you kidding me? I'm never going to go to fucking grad school.
I'm not planning to go to grad
school.
If I got to go to grad school for completely free,
I would love to.
Then
go to
sure.
School.
Yeah. You know?
I would love to go to art school.
Yeah. Art school. Yeah.
I cannot imagine anything worse right now at this point in my life than going to art school.
What if
I am
we were
on
totally
such a
free?
Different planet from you guys.
I applied to like 30 colleges. I didn't get into most of them. Yeah. And I would love to just keep going to a different college every 4 years. That would just be great.
I don't want to go to college anymore. But if I could learn something and not have to go into debt, I feel now like I'm in a better place to like focus
than I was. Yeah. Also, there's no shame in community college. Like go to community
not
college.
At all.
Take a class.
I mean, look, though, if you do want to go to USC, I will say that USC, you can, unless you like actually want to explore LA, it's like downtown's very like, you know, walkable compared to a lot of the rest of LA. I think it would be easier to go to USC and like get away with using public transportation than it would to go to, I don't know, you know, some other place here, Pepperdine, then you're screwed.
Oh, yeah. Don't go to any of those LA adjacent schools. I made the mistake of going to Loyola Marymount for the first 2 years of my college education. It was might as well have been in Ohio. It was,
Or in Ohio. Yeah.
Oh. She did not specify what the program was she got into, but I would say if it's something like creative writing, maybe you don't need to go to LA for that, especially if it's going to cramp your style in other ways. But if it's something like, you know, obviously like law school, med school, business school, where you actually need the degree to like do the thing that you want to do, I mean,
go to law school.
If you're a good person, go to law school, honestly. Like,
you
yes.
should come out to LA, right, for like 3 weeks. And just see how it feels and then make your decision if you have that amount of time. Because then you would know. Like, if it's something you really want to go for, we're not going to say don't. But at the same time, like, yeah, I'm not compelled. Your reservations, caller, are too strong already.
Yeah, I think that SC is also going to be a bigger culture shock than, like, other LA adjacent schools you could go to, like UCLA or...
I'm just hearing this UCLA nationalism coming out so strong.
Man. It's true.
I secretly stan UCLA because I went to a family camp there. I think we've talked about this.
They have some scandals, too. All the schools have scandals. Brown, where Tessa and I went, just had this big scandal that was about there being, like, a secret organization for... rich kids inside the school.
I know.
Which I was like, was
no
it
one
the whole
invited
school
us.
That? Well, I was like, was it even secret? Like,
yeah. Oh, are you talking about the, was it the like, you know, the people who would get the espresso martinis and ask for a box
the
of
Euros,
matches?
The European people?
Well, they weren't all European, but that's, it was like this
there
was espresso
like a,
martini
There was
club.
Like a royalty tier at Brown where it was like, I'm not sure those people got in on grades, but
it seems nice.
Must be nice. Guys, should we talk about a neurotic thriller?
So we had a debate about whether this counts, but whether or not you agree, will you not join us right now on an
erotic odyssey?
Guys, I pushed really hard for this movie. which is the hand that rocks the cradle, aka natal attraction. But then I realized when we talked last week on the phone that maybe it's not really erotic. It's post-erotic.
Well,
it's
we
a domestic thriller. Yes.
We polled our listeners on Twitter, and after a whopping 50 votes, I think I came out something like 75% in favor of it being an erotic thriller.
There are boobs.
There are boobs,
you know?
But it is...
And those boobs are working hard in this movie.
Those are mommy boobs.
Oh, don't you dare go there, girl. They're great boobs. They're fantastic.
No,
boobs.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like they are the context in which they are. Well, whatever. Okay.
You know, they have many, many jobs, but this is an important role of a
They look
of the
amazing.
Breasts.
I would never say anything not in favor of the boobs in this movie. I'm just like
Bless
specifying
you.
Their role, which is every bit is thrilling.
Yeah.
An erotic thriller.
It is.
This movie is bonkers. I was not prepared for the level of insanity. Like, I watched the trailer. I think I watched some clips. I told you guys I watched the Siskel and Ebert episode reviewing it. And I thought I was prepared for some kind of, like, proto-Lifetime movie. I was not ready for this movie. It is so brutal.
Yeah, soup to nuts. Like, from the very, very beginning of the movie, the fucked up stuff starts to happen. It snowballs. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
spoilers to follow in case anyone was thinking there wouldn't be. We're just going to spoil everything, I think.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we can't really talk about it.
The interesting thing, just to like maybe start this off, because I think it kind of helps me contextualize what is so, I don't know if I like this movie, but it is certainly remarkable. And it was written by Amanda Silver wrote this. So she's like a rare woman scribe in the erotic thriller genre.
A rare woman scribe, period.
Yeah.
I just saw a movie poster art walking over here, and just like I was looking at it, and the Two and a Half Men song started playing in my head. I was like, men.
But she has a fascinating career.
Yeah.
Did you go look her up?
This was like her film school script, correct?
Yeah.
It was like her first screen.
I think this movie's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it is.
And...
But it's also like it is problematic and dated.
Is it?
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I think like, you know, obviously the character of Solomon played by Ernie Hudson, who does a great job, by the way.
He's amazing.
He's
yeah.
amazing
great.
In everything he does. But it is like, so he plays a mentally challenged kind of like handyman who then ends up being kind of the hero of the story. But it is rough. Like, I guess
what happens to him is gnarly AF.
It's the worst thing that happens, maybe you could say, other than the deaths, but maybe in a way worse.
Right. It's super gnarly, but it's also so interesting because
I mean,
it's like the whole point is that like they're afraid to leave the yuppies are afraid to leave their child with him because he's like mentally challenged and black, and like they're totally fine to leave their child with fucking Rebecca De Mornay because she's blonde and white and like femmy
and seems rich because she formerly was.
Yeah. And like they just assume it's like that thing. They're like, they assume she'll be like naturally a great nanny, and then she's a sociopath.
Yeah. It is really hard at this point in time for me to see an actor who's not who is like, you know, I think the handling of his character was like slightly ableist. It's at this point really hard to like see someone portray someone who is mentally challenged if the actor is not.
It's a good job.
It's hard. He does great.
Well, I think he does a good job. Like, I think it's still a case by case basis for that kind of thing, but like the only thing that kind of rubs me the wrong way about that is just like that he is sort of positioned as the person who like senses the trouble early on, like kind of vis-a-vis these like intuitive, maybe one might say magical powers.
Well, but
exactly.
Also,
yeah.
But I also think it's like she thinks he's an idiot, so she goes out.
She doesn't conceal her behaviors as much.
Yeah, she's like herself around him because she like thinks he'll never do anything.
And to be fair, he accidentally. So this is the big like scene that everyone kind of is left with, and then later when you watch it again, you're like, but there are so many other even worse scenes. But it's primarily disturbing. You see Rebecca De Mornay as the nanny, who gives her name as Peyton Flanders, but is in fact Mrs. Mott. She breastfeeds Annabella Ciora's baby, who she's like, yeah, nanny, that is like, and Solomon sees through the window because he's like cleaning the gutters or painting the trim.
That is the central horror scene in this movie, and it's amazing because you've never seen it before.
And it's and it's so like it gets you on a gut level.
It fucks you up because Rebecca De Mornay is so hot,
so
and it
hot.
Is like
it's
a
so
topless
icy.
Scene, mm-hmm. but then you're like, no. Annabella Sciorra is also fucking fantastic.
She's amazing.
Yeah. She's like got
Gloria
the whole
Trillo.
Flannel. Yeah, the whole like flannel, like Northwestern housewife thing down with the Volvo and everything, but it's just like so radiant. Like, I don't know.
This movie is great because it gets into some of the same stuff as Fatal Attraction, where it's just like yuppie stuff and like women's anxiety about success of like, you know.
Well, there's literally Julianne Moore's character is literally killed by the glass ceiling.
Oh,
it's
even
a
thing
of a greenhouse. No, it's true. She is literally killed by the, and she has given a line earlier during a dinner where she's like, nowadays, a lady has to bring in $50,000, make lasagna, and give blowjobs. Who can make it work? And then she's killed by a glass ceiling that falls on her head.
And she talks about selling a house for like $3 million. Let's talk about Julianne Moore for 1 second in this movie.
Oh, let's talk about her for a long time.
Erotic thriller.
Well, she is a Frasier character that walks into this movie. She
erotic thriller
Ross.
Repertory player Julianne Moore shows up again in this film to play the best friend of Annabella Sciorra.
Also the only person with any sense in this movie. Like, she's the she is the only intelligent person who acts intelligently.
Well, it's another thing, too, where it's like she's Annabella Sciorra's husband's old girlfriend. So you're like, you know, she's the person you would maybe, like, not trust around your husband. Mm-hmm. But, like, for some unbelievable reason, she trusts Rebecca De Mornay.
Yeah.
Because she trusts her husband, I guess. She's like, we are believing that Rebecca De Mornay is this weird, like, widow or what?
So she claims, she gives them a story as Peyton Flanders that her husband was murdered and that her, I don't know if she actually says that her child died or that she had a miscarriage. In truth, what well, just to give the backstory for anyone who's not seen The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, we start off with Claire, who's Annabella Sciorra. She's getting a prenatal exam from a new doctor, Dr. Mott, who molests her. She goes home, tells her husband, who's played by Matt McCoy, who's in L.A. Confidential and Police Academy. And he's just like the worst character. He's such a horrible character.
He's like a doll. But I love him because
he's
like
perfect.
He's a prop in the way that like every woman in this sort of movie always
that's
ends up being a
great.
Prop. He's just like,
what's
like, wrong,
honey?
He's
like kind of hot, kind of nice, like has
he's got
no
like
emotions.
Like a really, really good beard. Like it's just like,
yeah,
epic,
great beard. Just peak 30-something.
Exactly. So anyway, he's like, you have to tell the police. She does. It turns out other women have also been molested by Dr. Mott. Dr. Mott commits suicide. His wife, Rebecca De Mornay, is pregnant with his kid. You know, after they tell her, like, well, he killed himself and all these women are going to be afforded a judgment, so we have to sell your house and you're going to be
you're
left
losing
with nothing.
Everything.
She just falls to the ground, faints, has a late-term miscarriage, ends up, you know, going to the hospital. They have to give her a hysterectomy. Her baby dies. And then she's like, an eye for an eye. I'm going to take everything.
She reinvents herself as an evil Mary Poppins.
Yes. Yeah. And gives herself a new name. However, one of the most unbelievable things in this movie is that on the news, so she's like she's recovering from this horrible thing that's happened, Rebecca De Mornay's character. She turns on the news and they're, you know, the news are like, well, a doctor has committed suicide after this lady,
this woman,
with a picture
they show
of her,
her picture
and her name.
And her name.
She accused him.
None
and
of
she's
this
like,
bothers
cool,
me.
I'm going to find you.
My only complaint about this movie is that I feel like the reveal that she's the doctor's wife could come later in the movie. Like in the middle.
Oh, you mean like for us?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like instead of front loading it with like,
oh, yeah.
You know, that we find, like we didn't have to see the face of who the doctor's wife is until.
Yeah, that I think that would have been a better like gotcha in the final act if you want it. Because we start off like waiting for her to do something messed up. The thing though, the only thing though is that this movie. The things that she does in this movie are so brilliant and so fucked up that, like, even knowing from the get-go that she's on a revenge path, I am still shocked by what she's doing, what she does.
It's so brutal.
Rebecca De Mornay is fucking amazing, and we should talk about her now because she is so underrated. She's
so good
in Risky Business and in this, And I learned everything about her. And what I learned is that her dad was a famous conservative Orange County talk radio guy.
Who was like a shock jock, right?
Yeah, like the first guy to be like, you know, conservative California. It was Mr. Orange County. His name was Wally George. She was estranged from him because he was like a serial bigamist.
She said he was a bigamist and he was like, I'm not, and that's liable. And
they
got into
the
whole
like,
thing.
Like a wife in every port, maybe, yeah, kind of thing. But yeah, she's from Santa Rosa, which checks out nicely.
So while we were watching the movie, there's this scene where she's going insane in a bathroom
That's
stall.
The best scene.
It's so good.
She beats up the bathroom.
And I think she's wearing like a red sweater. And then she's like just kind of bulldozing around with like this, just hitting everything. And my husband was like, oh, you know, this totally reminds me of The Shining. It's like being like so Jack Nicholson. And then I totally didn't remember that she was in The Shining.
In the TV movie.
In the TV movie.
Not a good TV movie.
Oh. A very bad TV movie. But I watched it also, all the way through
But
anyway.
She, when she, like, I totally thought of The Shining when she, like, uses the poker from the fireplace to, like, stab her way through the door. I was like, oh, my God. It's just... And it's actually, like, weirdly more terrifying because of the case, but just because I hadn't seen it a zillion times before.
She also, because she never appears to, like, sweat. She keeps straightening her hair, but she'll just go totally insane, and then she'll straighten her little scrunchie. By the way, the worst hair in this movie that I've ever seen in any movie. 92.
Her hair?
There's all the hair. The stringy little bangs, the scrunchies. At one point... I don't remember who.
Oh, I like all that stuff.
Someone's wearing a scrunchie that has been like twisted around like the world's smallest ponytail, so it just looks like a long scrunchie tail.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I can't even watch this.
I'm fine with all that stuff.
I'm really fixated. Okay. Probably.
But I did like how it was like she's always wearing like pencil skirts and like she's like professional.
She's like very... She freaks out when she gets a stain on her.
Yeah.
She doesn't. It seems like she did not have the budget to get a new wardrobe for her new identity. Because when we see her like, you know, finding out that she's not going to get any money from her husband's estate, then she's like wearing this totally buttoned up like yuppie outfit.
She knows what's works for her and it's pencil skirts. And she's not wrong at all.
She works those pencil skirts for sure.
She... fucking rules. I feel like this and Fatal Attraction are both domestic horror, domestic erotic thrillers.
Yeah.
Which is what makes them such classics. And I feel like I wish there were just like 100 more movies like this.
Well, they're really about like the home as a battlefront. Like that's, that, like, less so than stuff like Basic Instinct or Positive Evidence or whatever. Like,
I guess
this is very
much
about.
I was going to say we got to do The Crush sometimes.
Oh, my God.
Crush
is so good too.
The Crush
and
is so problematic.
Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy for sure.
Someone comes into your house and like fucks everybody in your family.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ultimate nightmare.
Instead of coming in and killing you, they just want to like have sex with your husband and breastfeed
it's
your
like
baby.
Like what all the Italian art movies are about.
Yeah.
But like the level of seed planting and like long game, like absolute emotional ruination that she wreaks in this movie is just so astounding. Like, yeah, just like the way that she makes everybody just mistrust each other in really subtle ways. Even like
it's
the first
smart.
Thing that she does, like one of the first things she does is they're going to go out to dinner with Julianne Moore and her husband. And Claire has put out this like sexy little red dress to wear to dinner. And when she's like in the bathroom, Peyton puts a stain on it. And so she
perfume.
Can't wear it.
Poison.
Perfume. Perfume.
It's poison. Perfume.
Yeah. And then she has to like wear another dress and she has to wear this like kind of frumpier dress. And it's just like that like subtle thing of where the husband's like, oh yeah, no, you look great in whatever you wear. Like what happened? Like it's just like sowing the seeds of him like trying to sabotage their relationship.
Yeah. These movies
that's the only thing that doesn't work for her. But
it's still like it's like honing in on women's fears and making movies.
Well, also gaslighting is just the most like I'll watch anything about gaslighting. Gaslighting's like my ultimate fear, I think. and just to see someone who's like they just want to like not only destroy your family, but just leave you thinking you're insane and like.
Well, she makes her feel insane.
Exactly.
She alienates her from everybody. It's really amazing. And as somebody with asthma, this movie scared the fuck out of me.
Oh my god, I know. But it's also such she's not getting good direction on how to use an inhaler at the beginning. She'll kind of puff it like
it's
an atomizer.
Stagey.
Like
it's
as
a
if
little
she's
stagey.
Missing her face.
You know, Curtis Hanson is just so,
so good.
He makes so many bangers.
Yeah, he does.
And a little underrated, maybe for not being flashy, but like this movie,
this movie's hella flashy, dude.
I know, but it's not like.
It's also got another Graham Revell score on it.
I know. And this time I loved it. But I was like, what were you? Maybe he hated Body of Evidence.
Maybe. Yeah.
And he was just like, I'm not going to really do my best work here.
But, you know, if it takes place in like a leafy Pacific Northwestern house, beautiful house, we'll watch it.
Do you think that it was just really cheap to shoot there at the time and that's why every single thriller took place there?
Yeah, there were a lot of Pacific Northwest movies. I think it was just... Also, Sleepless in Seattle was about the same time, too.
I think it was just the 90s. It was the Seattle boom. Seattle was seen as cool.
It's also, like, interesting because, you know, Claire being, like, the matriarch of the family or whatever, making a greenhouse and she's just, like... in all of these really lush settings and, like, you know, her house is just, like, filled with greenery. And then she goes to this really weird modern house where the doctor lives.
Right.
And it's, like, on the sea or whatever. It's, like, on a cliff.
I like these movies because they lean into, like, the... I just love crazy women.
Me too.
In movies, you know? Maybe not in real life, although debatable. I definitely... Well, sometimes...
I mean, I love, you know, we're going to bring up Basic Instinct every week until we actually watch it for this, but like, and I love that movie as much as you guys do, but like, there is some extra kind of spiciness and like rareness to seeing something about a crazy woman, like, who is also smart in the same way that, like, you know, Catherine Trammell is smart, but is in battle with another smart woman. Like,
right. It's the best.
It's not like a man being threatened by this diabolical woman. It's like, it passes the Bechdel test. Let's just
say that. It does. It totally does. And then Julianne Moore, too. Level. Yeah, these are women's movies. And
even
I wish
the
there were
kid
just...
who played Emma.
Oh, she's so good.
She's really... And then she went on to be in The Nanny.
Oh, that's where she's from.
Yeah, that's where she's from. Madeline Zima.
No, that's
such a good kid actor. I rarely ever think that, but she is so good.
I was going to say The Nanny is like the Good World Hand That Rocks the Cradle, but then I feel like she breaks up that family also.
Yeah.
So the Nanny.
Maybe
that rocks
maybe
the
whole industry of nannying is inherently broken and bad for people.
Well, I think the thing is that when you hire a nanny, which I've never done, but I'm imagining, and I know
because you saw this movie too many times, clearly.
No, that's the reason. There's never, like, a lack of ambivalence when you entrust your kids to someone
else. How well do you know somebody,
It's like the perfect opportunity to exploit that fear because, I mean, you can know, the better you know someone, but it's like all
and
it
again,
takes.
And again, that's why it's like, I feel like this movie's a little progressive because it's like the person who you think, like, looks like the person who will, like, treat your child well is, like... not that person. And like, even y'all are a little like racist and ableist for like not fully trusting
that's 100%
Ernie Hudson around your child.
I just find it difficult. Like, it just seems so dated to watch the cliches in that character.
For sure. You know what that reminded me of also, which is not an erotic thriller, but falls into the blonde sociopath genre along with this and the Theranos documentary is The Bad Seed, obviously.
Oh, so good.
Tess and I's favorite movie about a dead-eyed blonde sociopath. There's like a handyman in that who like figures out what's going on before everybody else.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think it's also just like people who are in your house, you know, like you make the decision to trust them and it can just easily prove to be a bad decision. But that's also true of like, you know, the people in your family, if you really want to think about it.
Or yeah, just your friends.
Depending on how big your family
is. Even your parents like, in you some know. Cases.
Exactly.
Wow. What a movie.
Such a movie. Before we sign off, do you guys feel like taking one tiny little last night call?
Yeah, sure.
You were talking about the Langoliers this week, and I just wanted to note that it was filmed in my hometown, basically. Stephen King is from Maine, and so this was filmed in Bangor, Maine, and all of the celebrities, which, I mean, I don't know if that really qualifies, but the actors in the movie were staying in the area. Which is how I met, you know, Bronson Pinchot, Balki Bartokomas, one of the most exciting celebrity encounters of my life. And it was a real exciting time for us. And I did write a review of it for my high school newspaper, and I remember not liking it. So I might have to revisit it based on Ollie's recommend. Thanks as always. Bye-bye.
Guys, you are two born and raised Angeleno kids. So no, maybe
not
I
Tess.
Was not born and raised. I came here in high school. In
okay,
high.
Okay. Yeah. So, you grew up. You spent some of your growing up years.
Tess yes, went to Sesame Street, so
I did. I went.
But also,
she
came from New York. Like it's yeah. the same diff. Anyway, yeah. you guys both came from the big city. So maybe a movie filming in your hometown is not necessarily the exciting thing.
No, but I got very excited about all the porn shoots in the Valley always. Mm-hmm. glamour.
Those are open sets, right? You can just like walk in. And take
just exciting. Just see the production. I'm, you know, the glamour of Hollywood. What did you see being filmed, Emily? Did you have an experience?
Well, I wanted to talk about this just because of this movie being shot in Tacoma, Washington, and Seattle, like two places that I grew up, and also the Pacific Northwest being used for a lot of things. In Iowa, a movie shot there, like, I feel like the summer that I moved there, which is not a well-known movie, but it was like a thing that everybody knew about for like years, called... White Boys. It came out in 1999. It was shooting the summer that we moved there. And it's like a movie that nobody has ever heard of about like white rappers. But it was weirdly well known around there just because it was a movie that shot in Iowa City. Weirdly, a book that actually took place in Iowa City and they made a movie of, I don't think shot there, was Jesus' Son. But I also remember in Los Angeles, like early in me living there, being very tickled to live on the street where they would like shoot all the New York set things in L.A. because I lived on a street that looked like New York. So it was very a lot of times there were just you would kind of just transform and suddenly look like New York in the winter, which was always fun. They shot like an HBO movie, I feel like, in Tacoma when I was a kid that I auditioned for, actually, that I never heard anything else about afterwards. But it would happen every once in a while around Seattle and Tacoma.
People shoot a lot of commercials on the street that I live on. And I am in a union, but more importantly, I have a really cute dog. And I've always had the dream that my dog, though she is untrainable because she is old and cannot hear, will be like scouted. Because I'm like, I don't want my kids to act like they're children. They have jobs, which is like school and just being children. I don't particularly.
I like that
want
you called being
this.
Children a job.
It is a job. Is. You're growing up. I don't think I'm going to be scouted and probably. And
but you think the dog might be.
But the dog. And so what I'll do is if someone's. This happens like people shoot on our street, I would say twice a month. I always try and time my dog walking for that during the shoot. And then I like linger in front of the shoot location and I'll be like, good dog, Sadie. Wow, you're just such a good dog.
Wow, you really know where the light is.
Try and upsell the dog. It's never worked. You know, as soon as I start moving on, I'm so mad at them. It's just like a terrible taste. Even if they like don't need a dog in their commercial,
let's
just
take
it.
Sadie A to Hollywood and Vine to be discovered.
Yes,
Sadie
needs
is the
to
dog.
Be discovered.
She's a beautiful
take
old
her to the soda
lady.
Counter.
She's an old lady baby.
Just sipping on a root
sipping
beer.
Sipping on a little milkshake. Yeah. Uh-huh. But also, we should take her to Melrose sometime and do an Instagram dog shoot with her.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I would love for her to be a late-in-life dog influencer.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that she should be like, you know, the equivalent of like an
of
older
advanced
character
fashion.
Actor.
Sure. Yeah. She can be like our pod dog. Yeah. Okay.
So, but we would love to hear from you if you live in any place that is not New York or LA or have had any fun encounters with a film shoot off the beaten path. Please give us a night call at 1-240-46-NIGHT or a night email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Night Call Podcast, Twitter at Night Call Pod, and be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review as well.
Don't get phone scammed.
Don't get phone scammed.
Yeah. Watch out for the scanners. Scammers. Scammers
also
and
the scanners.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah.
Don't get head exploded.
Bye.
See you all next week.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by anxiety, struggling to find restful sleep, or plagued by a restless inability to focus? It's time to break free from the chains of mental health challenges and discover a path to healthy living. Welcome to Amen University, founded by renowned psychiatrist and brain health expert, Dr. Daniel Amen. Dr. Amen, alongside a team of esteemed doctors and experts in their fields, understands the struggles you're facing and are here to offer solutions. From debilitating anxiety to sleepless nights filled with worry, our courses are meticulously crafted to target these specific challenges head on. Join us on a journey of transformation led by Dr. Amen and a roster of top-tier professionals. Say goodbye to the constant battle with your mind and embrace a future filled with hope and possibility. Visit our website today to explore our courses and start your journey towards a brighter tomorrow. Use code BRAIN10 and get 10% off. That's code BRAIN10 and get 10% off your first purchase. Amen University, because your mental health matters.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.